Chapter 7. It was dark, and the only light came from the single lamp attached to the driver's seat of the caravan. The flickering flame created a halo around our horses, but barely stretched to the road ahead of us. Thankfully, Edeni promised to stay with me in the front until we reached the edge of the desert. Then we'd stay on a single path toward Valestia. The Duchess seemed to know the road well, and she warned me when a curve came up ahead, or if the road sloped down, and I needed to slow the horses. I felt bad that we had to leave the soldiers behind at Granum, but we needed the iron to build the cannons, and I already knew that if something happened while we were away, Askara and his men could handle it with ease. Though I doubted that anyone in Granum, the citizens or the soldiers, would notice their numbers hidden outside the city. I wanted to ride late into the night, or at least until we reached the desert. Then we'd pull off to the side and rest for the night. The faster we got to Valestia, the quicker we'd be able to get the supplies and get back to Granum. I wasn't sure what we'd find in the small mining town. Still, from what Edeni had told us, it was mainly populated by men with a handful of aristocrats there to act as guard dogs for the brutes. I'd only been a few places outside of Edenheart. Most of them had been to the north, not the south, and I wondered what laid on the other side of this endless road we traveled. Most of my women were already tucked into bed while Edeni and I sat in the front seat of the caravan. The small window behind our shoulders was closed, and the interior room was dark. I didn't mind that my other women had gone to bed without us. In fact, I was glad that they were able to rest during these brief moments in between battles. Edeni sat poised beside me, and she leaned forward with her hands pressed against the small wooden wall of the driver's seat. The wolf woman seemed to be fully alert, and her violet eyes glowed with the reflection of the burning lamp. I already knew that the she-wolf could see in the dark, and I was grateful to have her here with me at this moment. The Duchess probably had the best eyesight out of all of my women, along with Daisy, Ryan, and Valerie, since all of them had the ability to see in the dark. "You said you've been to Valestia?" I asked.
"Yes,"
the she-wolf nodded.
"But only once before, though I doubt it's changed much since I'd been there last."
"You think so?" I uttered.
"Unlike Bascon and Granum,"
the Duchess began, and then cleared her voice of all emotion.
"There isn't much the aristocrats can do to better it. It's a small mining town, and it's always been that way. Not only that, but it's in the middle of the desert. You know the nobles of this land. That place is far away from any amenities that they enjoy daily. There's very little water to go around, and the water has to be shipped in from larger cities on either side of the desert. No, as I said before, most of the aristocrats who do live there do so out of necessity. They were either too poor to remain in expensive cities, or were overtaken by a stronger and more powerful woman. So they go where they can make as much money as they can, even though the habitations are less than adequate, but they're desperate. They need the extra money to be able to move on from that place. I mean, there are other ways for them to make money, but they find those lowly and humiliating."
"What do you mean? I don't quite understand."
"It takes a certain type of woman to become one of the Queen's royal guard. It's a job that many women don't want, but force themselves to do for the honor and privilege that comes along with it. Many of them rise through the ranks, and then retire early to enormous manors in the inner circle of the capital."
"Inner circle? Like a social circle?"
No.
Edeni shook her head.
"You've already heard about the boroughs within the capital, but those boroughs are part of an even larger network of areas. There's a thing in the capital called the Three Rings. The first ring is the largest, and it holds most of the working-class people. It's inhabited by a lot of men, consorts, and workers. Their homes are nothing more than shacks with tin roofs over them to keep out the rain and snow. The second ring is smaller, but that's where most of the nobles and the aristocrats live. Their manors sit a level higher and have a vast maze of stairs to it along with the sloping roads."
"Literally looking down on the men. How fitting."
"Exactly. Now, the third is even smaller than the other two. But that's where the palace sits, along with all of the municipal and court buildings. The only people who live in the third ring are the queen, the royal court, and the queen's most trusted advisers. To pass through the third ring, you have to get written approval from the queen herself. But even then, That's difficult to get in the first place.
So we'll have to take that into account when we attack the capital. I think we can find our way around that fairly easily. I don't have my plan fully fledged yet, but I think what we'll do is sneak into the first ring and hide out for a bit. Spread our goals and beliefs around to collect as many consorts as we can. When we have a large-sized group of them, we'll work our way up to the second ring. I'm almost certain that a lot of the men who live in the first ring will be apprehensive about joining our cause, but as soon as they see us triumphing, they'll be scrambling to join our masses.
To jump off of that,
the wolf woman smiled.
I'm sure if we worked with Josephine and Cecilia, we could round together the Harlots' masses and add them to our armies. We already heard that the Harlots in the capital took over the 7th borough. I just hope that we can get there in time. They just have to hold out a little longer. Stay strong until we can get there and aid them in their battle.
I'm often amazed by the Harlots, I breathed. Josephine and Cecilia are the only ones I've met, but learning more about them and their backstories makes me feel proud. They live in a world that hates them simply because of what they believe in. If they're found out, they're jailed or sent to insane asylums. Or worse, they're killed. We never really had an issue with them back in Edenheart, did we?
Not that I knew of. I had no idea that one of my closest childhood friends was a harlot. If I continued as I was, and you hadn't transformed me, I probably would have never known.
What do you think you would have done? I asked. And instantly, Edenie's plump lips pressed into a firm line.
I don't think I want to answer that. I don't even want to think about it. Josephine was the only girl in Edenheart who was truly my friend as I grew up. But I would have had to do what I thought was best at the time. I wouldn't have killed her, though I'm sure that some of the other aristocrats would have wanted me to. I probably would have sent her off to an insane asylum. There are quite a few around the area that aren't too bad, but there's no hiding the fact that's a jail disguised as rehabilitation.
Have you ever sent anyone to an insane asylum before? I asked, purely out of curiosity, and Edenie's violet eyes suddenly softened.
I've done everything I could not to send anyone to those places.
The she-wolf cleared her throat.
The dens filled with diseases. The doctors there, if you can barely consider them doctors, don't even try to help their patients. More often than not, they treat them like lab rats and do all sorts of tests on them. When they're not abusing them, they leave them alone in cells for days on end without food, water, or even ways to clean themselves. Many women and unruly men who are sent there lose their minds within months. The whole point of these asylums is to aid and help the people sent there. But it's usually a death sentence for whoever steps inside the horrid walls. I've only sent someone there once, but I was young and naive. I fully believed that these doctors and nurses were there to help their patients. I thought the person I sent there would come back in a few months and be changed for the better.
What happened to them?
They died there.
Edenie clicked her tongue.
I don't know what happened. Either they contracted a disease, or they couldn't mentally handle the abuse given to them by those who were supposed to help heal them. I never sent anyone else to insane asylums. Sure, I used it as a threat on many occasions, but I wouldn't do it again.
Every time I learn more about the person you used to be, I feel as if you were just misunderstood. I had no idea that that had happened to you, nor did I know you'd only sent one person to an insane asylum, then never did it again because of what happened.
There were a lot of sides of me that I kept hidden from the world. My mother was such a strong leader, and I wanted the people of Edenheart to look at me and feel the same way. I never let any of my weaknesses or vulnerabilities show, but I was nothing more than a scared teenager underneath it all. Of course, as I grew older and became more accustomed to my work as the Duchess, I didn't feel that way. But that terrified young girl still haunts me. I wanted so badly for Edenheart to flourish under my instruction, but I never considered what I was doing to the people around me. Going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, if I'd found out about Josephine, I would have had to do something about her. It's just how it works for the leader of a city. No matter how close you are to a person, if that person does something to hurt or harm your city, you can't allow them to continue on. I've known Josephine for a very long time, but that wouldn't have given her a free pass.
I just think it's funny. I smiled and gazed up toward the glittering stars overhead. You and Josephine were such close friends, but the two of you are totally different. She was secretly a harlot going against everything you believed in, and you were the birthright duchess, so set in her ways and beliefs that many saw her as unyielding or unwilling to change.
I wouldn't call myself unyielding,
the she-wolf laughed and bumped her shoulder against mine.
Or unwilling to change. I was one of the more progressive aristocrats, thank you very much. If we wanted someone like that, Delphine should have been the one in charge. By science, I hated that woman. It's just so funny. Delphine is Daisy, but the women are nothing alike.
That's the wonder of my machine. You put someone in, and they come out as a completely different person with a new personality.
Except for me, Josephine, and Cecilia. We all came out relatively the same. Well, the only difference about it was my beliefs. But I'm grateful for that. Charles, I know I've said this before, but you saved me.
I don't think I saved you. I merely made you better.
No, I don't think you understand.
Edeny broke in with a curt wave of her hand.
If I'd continued to rule Edenhot the way I was, the city surely would have died. The queen would have encroached on my territory, and I would have had no other choice than to retaliate. I may be stronger, and my ability is more powerful than most aristocrats, but I could never face the queen alone. If I'd stood against her, Edenhot's aristocrats would have turned against me and joined her side. That's the worst part about the nobles. They hold no affiliation or connection with their leaders, unless, of course, it benefits them somehow. Given a chance, all of them would have turned their backs on me. You saw how they acted the day we attacked them. They didn't care about me, or even Edenhot, for that matter. They only care about themselves and their wealth. The world has grown cold, Charles. Cold and heartless. It's disgusting to witness. But even as a cog in the machine, I had no idea how to fix it. So, I went about my daily business and tried to ignore the voices in the back of my head.
That's why we're doing all of this, I barked. I started this out with the sole reason being to free the men from their aristocratic and matriarchal chains. But there are so many more reasons. We need to get things back to the way they used to be for both sexes' betterment. You speak a lot about your ancestors, particularly the one who built Edenhart from the ground up. She was married, wasn't she?
Yes.
The she-wolf breathed and nodded once. Do you know if she was happy? I probed. I know it was a long time ago, and you may not have that information.
That's the family's best-kept secret.
The Duchess laughed, and then leaned her head back to stare up at the faint stars.
She was madly in love with her husband. No one in our family wanted that fact to get out. She loved him so much, and she worked so hard to create a place where they both could live happily.
It was a secret? Why would it be a secret?
Because no one wants to admit that men and women used to love each other. They'd prefer if all of it melted into the past and everyone forgot it. But I can't, because in the family records, she left a diary where she wrote out all her inner feelings and thoughts.
I bet it was quite a shock finding her diary. Probably didn't have anything in there that you wanted to read, right?
Can you imagine? I was around 14 and believed everything that my mother and her advisors said about men. I'd often sneak into the records room and found it hidden behind a pile of scrolls. It was clear that no one in my family wanted anyone to find it, let alone read what was written inside it. The woman who built Edenhart from nothing was supposed to be this stoic, emotionless conqueror in our minds. But reading from her diary, it was clear to me that none of that was true. She loved her husband, and she spoiled him with affection. I found it disgusting to read, but for some reason, I was so intrigued by the notion.
I can understand that completely. You were born into a society that was so different from hers. It interested you since you never knew what that was like.
I've said it before, but I didn't know what it was like to be loved,
the wolf woman grumbled.
truly loved by someone. I'm sure that my mother loved me, but her love was cold, hard, and unfeeling. She raised me to take on a role. She conceived and gave birth to me for the sole purpose of raising me to be the next Duchess. I wasn't born out of need or want of a child, but because my mother needed an heir. That's why I think I'm so desperate for you to impregnate me. I want to have a child I can love. I want to have many children with you, Charles.
And I will give them to you, my love. As many of them as you want. Not just your own, but your sister's, too. I hope that when the others give birth, you'll see those children as not your sister's children, but your own, too.
Oh, of course I will. I'll love them as much as I'll love my own children. Going back to what I was saying about my ancestor, because I want to tell you this story. She developed powers, slowly over time, and this allowed him to quit his job. They had a few children, two boys and a girl. She took on the position as the head of the household. He didn't mind because he wanted to spend time with his children, and she was open to taking control of their financial needs. Of course, the Queen didn't like it. We've already talked about how she was the one who decided that men were lower than women, and my ancestor was the one she targeted first. She said that this was what men wanted, for women to work harder than them, so they could sit back and relax while their wives took on the manly roles in society.
So the Queen enslaved them. I shook my head. I don't think I'll ever grasp the reason she did it.
We don't even know the real reasons she did it. Though, I doubt I'll ever want to find out. She simply saw men as lower than herself, and decided to do something about it.
Sometimes I wonder what happened to make her think that way. What happened to her? What made her think that way in the first place? Was she like this from the moment she was born? Or did something happen later in her life that made her turn her back on the male population as a whole?
Maybe we'll ask her when we reach the capital and finally punish her for her crimes. You can ask her. I want to hear her answer. I want to know why she's done these horrible things for centuries.
In my head, I visualized what I'd say to the Queen. But when I tried to put it into words, I couldn't. Unlike many men, I was blessed with the choice of my life's path. And I'd gone down it despite everything put in front of me. Many of the males in society didn't have a choice, and the moment they stepped out of the boarding schools, they were sold into a life of slavery. Some of them even died at the hands of those who purchased them. Sure, I'd experienced verbal abuse, and a few times Edeni had whacked me with her wicked cane, but I'd never experienced what other men had. What would they say to the Queen if they could? Or would they attack her without a single word? For as long as I've been alive, I'd never heard a man speak badly about their mistresses or bosses, but I knew how badly they were being treated. It was ingrained into men not to talk badly about the aristocrats, or they'd be punished within an inch of their lives. So many times I'd seen men around me say something entirely passive about their mistresses, and then days later their deaths were announced by the town crier. If things continue on like this, if nothing we do makes the world change, there will be no men left in the world. The aristocrats and their horrible short tempers will be the end of an entire sex.
I agree.
Edeni bowed her head and knitted her hands in her lap.
As the Duchess of Edenheart, it was my task to calculate how many brutes died in the city per year, and then send it off to the capital.
Why would you have to do that?
It was a duty. To calculate how many people were currently in the population, men included. I'd have to send how many numbers of male and female deaths there were, along with the population. If the male deaths rose higher, the Queen would send out more male consorts to replace those lost.
Really? I thought she refused to aid Edenheart in any way, since she didn't have control over it.
Of course. But it's been that way for years. But if I didn't participate, I could be fined a hefty sum for not sending in my numbers. I always suspected that it was just another way for her to spy on me, though. She'd know how many people moved into my duchy, and how many left or died under my care. If the numbers dropped below the normal, then she'd have an opportunity to step in and take over because I wasn't responsible enough. So I worked hard, and made sure that everyone, the men included, were kept alive.
It just seems so strange how overly involved she was in Edenheart's business. You'd think she'd take it as a loss and let it go. I'm sure that it happened in the past, but why does she hang on to it for so long?
I have no idea. It's a strange and dark obsession that... Oh, Charles, up there. Turn to the left, and I believe we'll be close to being able to see the desert.
I followed the Duchess's instructions, shifted the reins in my hands, and moved my eyes over the horizon. It was so dark that I could barely make out anything around us. But just as Edeny had said, the trees slowly and slowly grew farther apart. Even the dirt underneath the rolling wheels felt different as we drove across it. As we were coming down the incline, we'd bumped along and we'd had to brace our legs against the driver's seat floor to keep from falling off. But here it was much smoother. As we passed the sickly-looking cedars, the ground glittered and flashed in between the blades of grass. If I had known better, I would have thought it was a smattering of snowflakes, but I realized instantly that it was grains of sand. When the trees dispersed, I lifted my eyes from the side of the road and looked out ahead of us. I stared into a bleak and desolate emptiness in front of me, and suddenly I felt so small compared to the never-ending desert sand in front of us. I could barely make out the path we rode on, and I gulped loudly before gripping the reins a little tighter in my fist. Edeny glanced at me out of the corner of her eye, chuckled, and then shook her head. What's so funny?
Just the face you were making. I don't think I've ever seen you look so fearful or amazed. When you looked out over Granum, your face paled, and you set your jaw as if you were determined to take everything on right there, right that second. But this is what scares you.
I wouldn't say I'm scared, my love. But we never know what waits for us out in the great unknown. Look at it, Edeny. It's just this huge, infinite emptiness. And we're stepping right into it.